All right, everyone. Today is March 5th, 2015, and this is a subcommittee on public safety of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. I am going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5514, the Judicial Department. And just so you know, at some point when the Senate gets here, we'll close a public hearing really quickly to do a work session to move a federal grant application, and then we'll go back into the public hearing. So first up, Lane, Curtis, and Norman, do you want to come up, all three? And I'll tell you who's on deck. It will be Jeff, or do you want Jeff up there with you? Do you want? Yeah, okay. It'll be Grant and Robin on deck. Let's not on this, but in general, we'll try to keep it around 5 minutes. But each, so they've got actually longer. So anyway, go.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, thank you very much. For the record, Lane Shetterly is my name. I'm an attorney in private practice over in Dallas. And it's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon, testifying today on behalf of the Oregon Law Commission. It's been my privilege to be the chair of the Oregon Law Commission since it was created in 1997. That was a long time ago. Some of you will remember. but I hope that
why are you pointing at me?
No, sorry.
No reason, I'm sure.
But I hope that even those of you who came along somewhat after will be familiar with the work of the Oregon Law Commission. It was created by the legislature to conduct a continual program of law reform and law revision, law improvement. And we've been very successful at that over the years. You've seen our materials, the bills that we have introduced for passage by the legislature. I'm very pleased at the support that we have had over the years with our product and the respect that the commission has received here at the Capitol. Our purpose today is to, of course, speak on behalf of our budget and to at least put on the record our request for an option package that would increase funding for the commission in this session. I have my friends here with me who from Willamette University who can speak to it as well. But very briefly, the story is that the commission, as busy as it has been and productive as it has been largely flat funded by the legislature for at least the last decade. During the period of the recessionary biennia, that actually was a good thing. We were very grateful not to be cut to the extent that many other budgets were. But the fact is that the cost of maintaining and providing service in the commission has increased over the years, of course. And since the state funding remained flat, the burden of that increasing cost has been borne every biennium more and more by Willamette University, with which we are in a private and public partnership. So our request in this session is for an increase in funding. You have the materials in front of you. I won't go over the details, except to say that we are asking basically for the state to assume a role more of parity with Willamette University. It should be a more co-equal partnership between the state and Willamette. And we are also asking, in addition to parity, for a one additional full-time staff attorney position. Right now we have one full-time staff attorney position that manages all of the work groups of the commission. As we get better at what we do, we tend to get more complex and difficult projects assigned to us, which we're glad to take on, but it does take a lot of staff time and work to keep those work groups moving forward and fully staffed. And so in order for the commission to be able to serve you by producing product in bills that that you can enact, we are asking for that one other position to help serve the work groups and advance the work of the commission. I will stop with that and turn the time over to my compatriots, but I thank you and be happy to answer questions when we're done.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Curtis Bridgman, and I would like to thank the subcommittee for allowing us to be here. I know your time is precious, so I'll be very brief. Lane put the issue very well. The one thing I would add just very briefly is to point out that not only has the budget remained pretty much flat since the beginning, originally the staff attorney position that we have was designed to be less than one FTE. I think something like 0.6 FTE. Same thing with the support position for that. And there, the opportunity there has, for the work done by the commission has grown. And with that, those are now pretty much full-time employees. They all they do is commission work. And we're very happy to do that work. We're very pleased with the partnership, but it has changed over the years. And our goal here is to not spend student tuition dollars on work that's being done for the state, even though it's very valuable work. And so we're very happy to continue to provide space. We have the hearings room in the Carnegie Building, which is specially built, which we built especially for this partnership. And we're happy to continue providing that and the overhead and all of that, but we're trying to make sure that the out-of-pocket expenses don't come from student dollars. So thank you very much for hearing us.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the subcommittee, Jeff Dobbins, Executive Director of the Law Commission. I'll just add that that one of the great things about the commission is the fact that the people that we have at Willamette that helped to staff the commission, we really, I think, helped the state leverage a relatively small investment into a lot more work, because we get a huge amount of volunteer time that comes in through the work of the work groups. Every session we have groups of 10 to 15 to 20 different attorneys and professionals coming in and volunteering their time to help us do the careful and comprehensive work that the Law Commission, we hope, is known for here in the building. So we appreciate your support and welcome your questions if you have any.
Questions?
Just a quick comment. Mm-hmm. Lane, it's always a pleasure to see you and hear from you. Don't hear and see from you enough anymore. And for those of you that may not remember, he served with us for a long time. And I always remember the one evening that we were out late and you're working late at the Capitol, and our caucus went out for a discussion about an issue. Can't remember what it was. And Lane, in those days, there was a piano in there. And for those of you who know it, Lane's a very good musician. And we were serenaded to a very nice rendition of Here Come the Clowns as we walked back in.
I think I feel my support for this request eroding. Thank you, Senator Bates. It's great to see you, along with all the rest of you. If I may, just one point, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and if you look at the history of funding, you will see that there was some biennia where there was special funding packages attached for specific projects. And so when we say the commission funding has been flat, we really are talking about the base funding. Those special projects, of course, are done. They were funded. They're over. But that base funding is what we're looking at lifting to parity.
Any other questions? Well, I just want to say thank you on behalf of the legislature for the work that the commission does. If we have some really difficult technical issue to wrestle with, the commission, usually works it out for us and comes in and explains the really technical, detailed parts of the law that we want to update. And so I want to thank you, and I want to thank Willamette for the support that the law school has given to make this work possible. So thank you.
Thank you. We really treasure it. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
And I'm going to close the public hearing quickly and open a work session. Department of Justice federal grant application. Mr. Borden.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. Before you is a Department of Justice request to receive permission to apply for a U.S. Department of Justice Office of Victims of Victim of Crime Act grant in the amount of $323,629.
Go ahead, Jen.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the subcommittee. I'm Shannon Savell. I'm the director of the Crime Victim Services Division at the Oregon Department of Justice. Just briefly, this is a one-time discretionary formula grant from the Office of Victims of Crime, VOCA. It's for $323,000, and it's anticipated to be spent entirely on training victims' advocates and for other associated trainings in the state of Oregon. The reason they have carved out a significant chunk of money for the states to spend on training is because they anticipate a 3 to 4-fold increase in VOCA funding in the next year. And with that would be an increase of up to 40,000 more FTE throughout the country. And so they want to make sure or ensure that there is a training budget in each state so that victims' advocates can be adequately trained and get consistent training in the field.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Shannon, the victims' advocates, will they all be in the DA's offices, or will they be somewhere else? Or tell me about that.
Senator Shields, members of the subcommittee. It's not limited to district attorney victim assistance advocates. Currently, VOCA funding funds nonprofits. It funds child abuse assessment centers and the district attorney victim assistance programs. However, VOCA administrative funding that comes to my office also funds the State Victim Assistance Academy, for which every victim advocate attends, and that's regardless of whether you're system-based or nonprofit. So this training would be available to all advocates throughout the state and may also even have a law enforcement component for training their advocates as well.
Great. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Any other questions? Shao.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Williamson and Shields and committee members. I'm Michelle Lisper with Chief Financial Office, and our recommendation is to approve the request.
Thank you.
And Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, LFO also recommends approval of the request.
Excellent.
Madam Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Shields moves the LFO recommendation. Is there any objection? Who's going to be the carrier?
Well, I can be the carrier.
Thank you. I will close that work session. I will open back up the public hearing on Senate Bill 5514. Grant and Robin, come on down.
Co-Chairs Williamson, Shields, and members of the committee, my name is Robin Selig, and I've been a legal aid lawyer for more than 30 years, focusing on family law and domestic and sexual violence issues. I currently work at the Oregon Law Center, and on behalf of my colleagues and our clients throughout the state, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of critical funding for courts, judges, and court-related staff. There are three areas I'd like to emphasize this afternoon. First is the court's fundamental role in providing protection for families in crisis. 40% of legal aid cases involve domestic violence. Courts are the portal to vital remedies to help victims and their children achieve safety, stability, and healthier futures. Second, timely access to the courts is essential for victims who depend on access to the courts for emergency protection orders. Third, I'd ask for a level of funding that will provide access and fairness to self-represented family law litigants who are now a permanent fixture in Oregon courts. Historically, support for self-represented litigants has taken two main forms in Oregon. First are family law facilitators who are at courthouses throughout the state and are a friendly face to help litigants fill out forms and navigate court procedures. Centralized family law staff at the Office of the State Court Administrator has been tasked with creating and updating the legal forms and explanatory materials that are critical tools on which self-represented litigants depend. Without proper forms, parties can't even participate in the process. Forms are used to start and end cases and do everything in between. When families are in disarray, the right tools allow parties to dissolve marriages, get legal orders relating to custody, visitation, support, and division of property. Outdated or legally inadequate forms may be rejected by some courts, may cause self-represented litigants to make mistakes that they can't recover from, and may delay or prevent entry of important orders and judgments. Finally, family law staff is crucial to the development of interactive family law forms, a long-term e-court goal. The good news is that interactive Family Abuse Prevention Act forms are now available to litigants on the Oregon Judicial Department website. Those forms are easier for self-represented litigants to use and create efficiencies for judges and court staff. The next step is to apply that technology to a larger body of family law forms. Funding for family law staff is to lend specialized expertise to that effort is key. Since 2009, the loss of facilitators and the elimination of family law staff, program staff, has been a blow to access to justice for self-represented litigants. We ask respectfully that you prioritize adequate funding for victims, self-represented litigants, and low-income Oregonians, and that in particular you expand support for courthouse facilitators and centralized family law staff. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions for Robin. All right,
okay. Co-Chair Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Grant Hansen. I am the Vice President and Global Counsel for Strategy and Operations at Nike. As all of you know, our global headquarters are located in Washington County. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today to offer testimony on the importance to the Oregon business community of providing adequate funding for a well-functioning court system in the state. Nike's roots run deep in Oregon. The company, which today employs thousands of Oregonians, was founded on a handshake, $500, and the mutual trust between legendary track coach Bill Bowerman and Phil Knight, a talented runner on Bowerman's U of O track team. From that handshake, Nike has grown into the world's leading designer, marketer, and distributor of authentic athletic footwear, apparel, equipment, and accessories for a wide variety of sports and fitness activities. Just a little bit about me. I grew up in Eugene and attended Lewis and Clark College in Portland. I began my career in sales and retail at a relatively obscure but growing Beaverton-based company called Blue Ribbon Sports. That was 1979. In 1981, Blue Ribbon Sports was merged into its parent company, Nike. I left Nike in 1982 to attend law school at the University of Oregon. I attended law school with my good friend, the Honorable Dan Ahern, who is here. I left Nike in 1980. After law school, I worked in private practice for several years and then rejoined Nike in 1988 in the legal department. I've worked as a lawyer for Nike since that time and have been fortunate to serve in a variety of legal roles for the company. As my colleague Rob Linewan testified in 2013, a well-functioning court system is indispensable for law enforcement and individuals and families in crisis. But the courts are also vital for Oregon's businesses and the state's economy. Speaking from experience, having practiced law in various jurisdictions for 30 years, state courts are critical to protecting economic rights as well as individual rights. Because of the efficiency of the Oregon courts, the majority of Nike's commercial contracts have Oregon choice of law venue provisions. Not surprisingly, in some commercial contract disputes, the monetary stakes are quite high. Continued business operations and significant dollars are at issue. In other cases, an immediate temporary restraining order, for example, may be requested because the damage caused by delay would be irreparable and cannot be measured in dollars. These are not imagined what-ifs, but realities that arise for Oregon businesses and Oregonians. A good example of where both individual and business interests arise simultaneously is in the form of the enforcement of non-competition agreements. Such disputes require the court to issue a decision, often within days, that balance the protection of proprietary business interests against an individual's right to work. Nike chooses to have its disputes just like these, settled in Oregon courts because history and experience tell us that we will receive an efficient, well-reasoned resolution to these legal issues. The Oregon courts provide a collegial and professional atmosphere that has a low tolerance for lawyer gamesmanship and unprofessional conduct. We are all better served when matters receive timely attention, when judges have time to read and understand the arguments, when courts can afford to pay to attract and retain lawyers interested in public service, and when businesses and individuals can rely on the courts to adhere to the rule of law. In all of these cases, the Oregon business community, the legal community, the Oregon economy, and Oregonians benefit. On behalf of Nike, I encourage you to support a judicial branch budget that will sustain a well-functioning and efficient court system in Oregon. It is critical to the business community, the economy, and the state. Again, thank you for allowing Nike to present our views.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? All right, thank you both.
Thank you.
All right, time for the counties. Lauren, Alex, and Jim.
Go ahead. Good morning. Good afternoon. Sorry. Co-chairs Williamson and Shields. I'm, for the record, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. Here to have a brief conversation with you about a particular section of the bill that deals with the appropriation, which I believe is a general fund pass-through for family mediation and conciliation services. This goes back to 2011 when there was a court revenue restructuring effort that had come out of the previous interim session. And that effort resulted in a change in the way funding for family mediation and conciliation were services were provided from an old situation where counties had an add-on fee and funded their own programs to the elimination of that process in favor of a statewide appropriation. The challenge for particular counties was that the experience to set that new appropriation was based on the 09-11 biennium. In Lane County's situation, we had processed a fee increase that was effective as of July 1, 2010. And thus, the look back essentially trapped us in a 10-year-old rate structure, which we've now dealt with for the past two biennia. We had two tools to address that. One was, two were for each biennia. We passed a little bit of a policy adjustment such that we could have the flexibility, Board of County Commissioners could have the flexibility to use up to half of the appropriation for law libraries for family mediation services. And in fact, that policy went both ways. So you could adjust for either or, no more than 50% of the money. So we used that for two biennia until, at least in my case, my budget officer said, you may no longer do that. The law library does not have enough reserve funds for you to support doing that any longer. So we're back today on this. The other tool that we used was the language there in the bill does say that the Chief Justice allocates the money to the counties after a conversation with the presiding judges. So our presiding judge did send a letter up to the Chief Justice. The issue there is that if the Chief Justice makes an adjustment for one county upwards, every other county has to go down. And so that's a barrier. In our case, we believe the we've taken about $160,000 from the Law Library Fund annually. And so in our case, what would be a perfect world if the appropriation, the allocation for Lane County went up by $320,000 over the biennium. And I'm happy to answer any questions I have. Otherwise, we've enjoyed a great working relationship with OJD. It's an important service, and I think you're going to hear more about the actual service rather than just the fiscal impact. Thank you.
Great. Any questions?
Great. Chair Shields, Chair Williamson, members of the subcommittee. My name is Lauren McNeil. Can you hear me all right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I am here very happy to be able to share with you from the programs in the counties. I serve as the Director of Resolution Services for Clackamas County, and I'm here also to speak about the proposed appropriation for mediation funding. I come in my capacity not only in with Clackamas County. We provide, among other services, the court-connected domestic relations or family law mediation services that are funded by this appropriation. But I'm also here on behalf of my colleagues statewide, part of the Oregon Association of Family Court Services, and more specifically as on behalf of my colleagues from the largest counties, which represent 63% of this appropriation. They are Deschutes, Clackamas, Lane, Multnomah, and Washington. We are very grateful for continued funding for mediation services. However, this proposed appropriation of $7.4 million represents flat revenues and falls far short of the need in order to maintain services. As you just heard from Alex, in 2011, the fee structure was changed, which removed the county's authority to assess a local fee to cover the cost of local services and instead to provide an appropriation from the general fund. It was the intent of the legislature at that time to provide a general fund appropriation that was equivalent, I'm quoting, to the historical funding that the programs received in prior years. That $7.4 million that programs had received in 2009-11 was then appropriated at the same level in 2011-13, again in 2013-15, and is proposed again for 2015-17. Since 2011, there has been no systemic statewide review of the impact of these static funding levels on programs and citizens, as well as on service provision. We urge a thorough investigation of the appropriate funding level needed in order to maintain program services. Various programs around the state have addressed this flat funding in different ways. Some have decreased services and or staff. Others have solicited different revenues to cover the shortfall. In Clackamas in 2010, the Board of County Commissioners had passed a four-year phased-in fee increase just prior to the 2011 change. Our estimate of the revenue that that would have produced shows it would have covered our costs. We have been fortunate to be able to make up the shortfall that is due to the static mediation funding from the state by way of county general funds, the marriage license fee, and direct fees charged to clients. Other programs have been less fortunate. Hello.
Party over here.
I see that. Family law mediation results in more durable agreements between the parties. It results in parents having more time with their children. Parents who mediate have more time and access to their children. More effective parenting, reduced conflict between the parties, reduced relitigation, and a substantial savings in judge and court time and costs. To enter another biennium with static fees from 2009-11 will cause further reductions in needed services to citizens. We urge a more careful look at the amount of the appropriation for mediation services. I am also happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you.
Okay. For the record, Jim McCauley representing Washington County. Just to keep brevity, I'm not going to repeat anything that the previous two panel members had, but I would share all of their concerns as well. We too were there in 2011 and brought in our concerns regarding the change in the overall fee structure and the system forward. We're now several years into it. And I can tell you last year for us in the county, it was a $40,000 shortfall. But that in itself was small, in large part because we had a $150,000 grant that our program was able to identify and help deal with the margin, essentially. That grant is up at the end of this fiscal year, which means that gap in the future is only going to increase. And we, too, would support a much higher amount within that appropriation so we can get back or at least stay up with some of the inflationary pieces that we've had to deal with here over the last several years. And I'll be happy to take any questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Bates.
I assume the original goal here was not to have his fee driven so that low-income, middle-income families could take advantage of this, so understand what the process was. The way the monies are allocated now, does it take into account changes in populations in certain counties versus others? I mean, is Jackson County and Deschutes County are growing faster than the rest of the state, and I think Washington County has too. Is that part of the formula you have for this?
Co-chairs and Senator Bates, to your first point about the design was to not impact low-income families. I think actually the design was to not have the point of that revenue restructuring task force. At least one of their goals was to not have so many different fees charged around the state, because each county, upon gaining a divorce, you paid a state fund plus a local add-on. And so the concern was by that effort was to standardize costs across the state. So I'm not exactly sure. Mr. Bender may know the actual divorce fee that sort of came out of that bill, but it was some sort of average of the statewide mishmash that existed of divorce fees. So there is now a standard fee. To your second point, the way the language reads in the bill in terms of that allocation is essentially Chief Justice consults with the presiding court judges to do the allocation. My assumption is that happens at that conference that Chief Justice Ballmer spoke of, but we certainly had gone through a number of examinations of what the representative revenues were from around the state, and I believe they've sort of tried to stick to that experience from the 2009-11 biennium.
Thanks. Mr. Bender.
Just to clarify some of the questions, Senator, that you had, the distribution, as has been stated, has basically been increased at the level that we would normally increase distributions at the current service level. I think it's about a 3% increase this biennium over the prior biennium. The distribution of how the monies are distributed, my understanding is that it has previously been based on the fee collections that the counties had back prior to the rescission of those specific fees. So I think it was the 2009-11 biennium. However, in the bill that OJD has brought forward to you, they would change the distribution to the 13-15 biennium civil actions commenced. So it would be based on this current biennium's civil actions. It would be a somewhat different distribution. I haven't seen how that is expected to change the amounts per county.
That seems different than what we were just told.
Yeah. I'm just the statute that has been introduced is Section 8.
Well, this is the introduction. This is not what's going on. I believe, Madam Chair.
Absolutely.
I believe you said that the judge makes the decision, the Supreme Court judge makes the decision of how the money is distributed to various counties.
Co-chairs and Senator Bates and Mr. Bender, I'm sorry, I don't have the bill in front of me, but as I recall, the way I read it was after consultation with the chief. The Chief Justice allocates monies to the counties after consultation with the presiding court judges.
Uh-huh, yes. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. I do apologize. I was reading the section about the law libraries. Okay. I'm sorry. Same dollar amount. It's just a different
distribution. Yeah, it's a little tricky.
Excuse me. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. So I'll call up Richard Spire.
Spear.
Sorry. Yeah. Ruth, come on up.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, I'm Rich Spear. I'm president of the Oregon State Bar. I'd like to share a special perspective on the importance of funding of an impartial, efficient, and free court system as far as the state of Oregon is concerned. Much of my career as a lawyer was a lawyer handling disputes that either could be filed in court or were filed in court. Since that time, quite a while now, I've been practicing full-time as a mediator. And based on that experience, I like to share a perspective that may not be appreciated quite as often as it should be, and it is that the existence of a strong, efficient state court system can keep cases out of court and actually encourage settlement. I can tell you that a very high percentage of disputes that come to Oregon lawyers never get filed. Of the cases that get filed, as you know, the vast majority get settled without a trial. I'm talking about civil cases in this instance. There may be no trial. There may be some minor motion practice that takes the attention of the court, but the courts don't need to spend much time dealing with these matters. Why is that? It's because lawyers, business people, litigants know that the court is there if necessary to hear a trial and to resolve the case. The perspective I have on this is underscored by what I've been learning as president of the Oregon State Bar and attending meetings throughout the country with bar leaders from bars from other states. When they learn that I'm from Oregon, the comment I hear almost invariably is, you have a very strong bar, you have very strong courts, your cases get to trial, don't they? My answer is yes. I also hear, particularly from lawyers who have had cases involving Oregon lawyers in Oregon courts, these are lawyers from other states, that our lawyers are highly qualified, do a good job for their clients, but are cooperative and don't disagree about unnecessary details, do disagree about the merits of a case. This underscores the fact that it is the existence of our well-funded and efficient court system that enables our people, enables Oregonians to have disputes resolved in an efficient manner, very often without the intervention of the court system directly. It's the existence of that system that makes this all possible. Be happy to answer any questions.
questions. Thank you.
Co-chairs Williamson and Shields and members of the subcommittee. My name is Ruth Beyer, and I am Senior Vice President and General Counsel of Precision Cast Parts Corp. Precision is an Oregon-headquartered manufacturing company that has grown from its small Southeast Portland roots into a worldwide producer of aerospace products for all the major airframe and jet engine manufacturers in the United States and Europe. In addition to our headquarters in Portland, our Oregon operations include manufacturing plants in Southeast Portland and Milwaukee and in Redmond. You've all heard the phrase, a deal is a deal. It's a concept that is often taken for granted. Most of us expect that when we enter into an agreement, the other party will live up to its commitments, be it to deliver products or services, to license technology, or maybe simply to make payments when payments are due. Principles such as enforceability of contract are fundamental to the existence and success of business. PCC and other Oregon businesses rely on our court system to ensure our contractual rights and trade secrets are respected by our business partners and competitors, and that other matters such as employment claims and other such matters are fairly addressed. Businesses are often able to resolve disputes without court involvement, but when litigation does happen, we need the courts to act quickly to resolve the uncertainties that impede our progress. We rely on our courts to provide three key deliverables. First, a framework of predictable and enforceable commercial rules, consistently applied and resulting in well-reasoned precedent. Second, timely decision-making when a dispute does arise in order to move the parties forward and to avoid the expenses associated with extended discovery and delay. And third, an adequate number of attorneys with civil litigation experience on the bench, especially attorneys who have had significant commercial law practices before becoming a judge. Attracting new judges with this background will require competitive pay levels, but will provide benefits that more than justify any extra cost. Advancements such as online filing will also facilitate efficiency and access and are a wise investment. Precision Cast Parts encourages you to adopt a judicial branch budget that will support these results. We believe it is important to Oregon business and to our state. Thank you again for allowing me to present Precision's views.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Shelley and Drake. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Co-Chairs Williamson, Senator Co-Chair Shield, and members of the committee. My name is Shelley Russell. I'm the current president of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, and I am here on behalf of the 950 attorney members of OTLA and the Oregonians that we represent in business, civil rights, consumer, employment, family, legal and medical negligence, motor vehicle and workers' compensation litigation. Those are all of the categories that we cover, and there may be a few I've forgotten. Adequately funding the judiciary is important to the civil bar. While criminal cases always take priority because our Constitution guarantees a right to a speedy trial, it's important to our members' clients that our court system is adequately funded so that they, too, may exercise their constitutional right to their day in court. When the courts are underfunded, the courts are understaffed, the courts are unsafe, they are unable to implement and utilize new technology such as e-filing, but most importantly, when the courts are underfunded, they are inaccessible to the people of Oregon. We at OTLA support Chief Justice Ballmer's priority of maintaining current service levels so that courthouses are open 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, and accessible to the people of Oregon. We also support his priorities for providing safe and suitable court facilities by improving the infrastructure of our courthouses throughout this state, finishing the implementation of e-court, improving our court services with a focus on helping families access justice and providing support for self-represented litigants, funding treatment courts, and providing appropriate judicial compensation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Williamson and Co-Chair Shields. My name is Drake Hood. I'm representing the Oregon Association Defense Council here this afternoon. The OADC is about a 700-member organization of attorneys who represent people on the other side of the cases that Ms. Russell just talked about, and businesses. So we represent those defendants in civil cases, and a number of our members also represent businesses on both sides of the V in a civil lawsuit. Really, I'm here just to echo the same sentiments that you've heard. The members of the OADC can't get their work done. Their clients, which consist of, for example, in my case, hospital systems, doctors, other lawyers, cannot get those disputes resolved without knowing that there's a court that's going to be open, that's going to have a judge that has a some background in, hopefully, in civil law, that can efficiently dispose of those cases. Because if we get rulings that are not consistent, that are not well founded on civil law, we end up taking more time in the courts of appeals, and those cases go on and on and on. And so, just to echo those same thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Questions for this panel. All right.
Thank you.
Sheriff Meyer and Jane Downing.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jason Myers. I'm the Marion County Sheriff, and I'm also the current president of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, as well as the Association of Oregon Counties, who are very much in support of the Oregon Judicial Department's budget. We particularly support the policy option package that restores adequate funding to local county court security funds, which have sustained some unintentional losses as a result of passage of House Bill 2562 in the 2013 session. As a matter of reference, your 36 Oregon sheriffs are responsible for providing security for the circuit courts in their respective counties. The Court Security Fund, which was established through the unitary assessment fee, has long supported local court security operations, court security improvements, and other items related to the safety of our judges, court personnel, and citizens who access this core governmental service. In Marion County, we determined that the changes made from House Bill 2562 have resulted in approximately $140,000 loss in revenue from this is computed from prior years' averages to our court security fund in each of our county fiscal years. If this funding is not restored, it will require drastic changes to the level of security that is provided at our court locations in our county. And as the county general fund cannot backfill these decreases without impacting other crucial county services. The impact that Marion County has felt with its revenue decrease is similar in other counties across the state and is obviously much worse for the counties that are in fiscal distress. In closing, I'd ask for your support of the Oregon Judicial Department's budget, and in particular this policy option package that restores funding to the Court Security Fund and ensures that our courts run safely and smoothly across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Sheriff Meyer?
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. My name is Jane Downing, and I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Hope and Safety, formerly Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service, serving Marion County with victims, domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about how important equal access to justice is for victims of domestic and sexual violence in our communities. each and every day, individuals are coming in who need the help and support of the court system, whether that's holding the offenders accountable or working with victims like I am. Just yesterday, I was in a courtroom where someone was seeking a protection order, and a judge was able to talk to that person about how important it was that this and what this protection could do for that individual. And that's what we need every single day, is a court that is engaged and helping keep some of the most vulnerable individuals in our community safe. I didn't know what Sheriff Myers was going to be talking about today, but certainly almost on a daily basis, our staff are asking for security to be able to help individuals who are afraid. And they're in each and every one of your communities. So I really encourage your support, and I thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So I have four folks from Jefferson County. And so you have two. We have two people from Jefferson County.
Was Huffman going to come? Did he sign up?
I don't know. He did not sign up.
Yeah.
Jefferson County panel.
There's just going to be two of us.
Okay.
Co-Chair Williamson and Shields. I'm Dan Ahern. I'm one of the circuit court judges for the 22nd Judicial District. I've served in that capacity the last 19 years, and I've been the presiding judge the last five. And I've been a practicing attorney in the area for 30 years. So I've worked in the courthouse that we're hoping to get rebuilt in a different location for about 30 of its 50 years, and it was inadequate. Wow. When I was in private practice. I was the chair of the county commission for 7.5 years, so I was the landlord. It was inadequate as a landlord, and I've been a tenant the last 19 years, and it's inadequate as a tenant. So I've been able to experience our current facility in all of its capacities, and it doesn't meet up. We've been working on a new courthouse for about 10 years. The prior presiding judge headed it up. We did space analysis. We'd present it to the county commission. They were very receptive, and they just said, we just don't have any money. And, you know, as a tenant, when you're going to your landlord and said, we'd like a new facility, and you don't pay rent, you really don't have a good argument to make other than their mercy. Well, in the last session, a bill came across that allowed a funding mechanism where the state would match some of the county contribution. And that was our end. The commission said, this is an opportunity that we can't pass up. And so we took our effort that we've been working on the past 10 years, put in our proposal. It was prioritized highly by the AOC and the Chief Justice, who represent the landlords and the tenants. And we did what a lot of rural counties do. We presented a proposal that we thought was very fiscally conservative. Apparently, we were so fiscally conservative, the body thought we could do a little bit better. And they cut our request, and we thought we had already done all the work for you, and that you wouldn't need to cut. Well, so then we had to go back to our landlord, who would have other facility needs, and say, well, remember that 50-50 match we were talking about? It's not so much. And so we are back as the tenant, hoping to support our landlord in their request to build this facility and do so adequately so it meets the needs of our county going forward. And this is my landlord. He's a great guy, and I hope you give him what he asks for.
Excellent.
My name is Jeff Rasmussen. I'm the county administrative officer for Jefferson County. In the audience with me is County Commissioner Mae Houston. We appreciate Chief Ballmer's request in his budget for the $2.5 million to complete our project. We'll be breaking ground April 20th. We've already borrowed our funds. We are ready to move forward. I understand the state bond sale will give us our $4 million in about a month. The county commissioners have taken the risk in borrowing the additional $2.5 million, the funding gap that we're asking for today. It's mainly for a couple of reasons. Number one, the courthouse is inadequate. We've been putting off repairs. Knowing that we're going to be going down this process, we cannot wait too much longer before something critical fails and we come back and ask for some emergency funding on a building that needs to get torn down. If we are not successful, it'll put Jefferson County in a financial bind probably for the next 15 to 20 years. There's some financial stats below, but we're a fairly poor assessed value county. The $2.5 million is will put our other buildings in jeopardy to maintain for the next 15, 20 years. The next newest building we have is a 1999 jail, which is in great shape. We actually have rented beds to Deschutes County and Crook County. So, but after that, we're going back to the 1970s, and so we'll have some building repairs. But just on the outside infrastructure of those five buildings, we've identified $2 million in the next 10 years that we'll just need to maintain roofs and HVAC units. So if we have to dedicate the additional money we've borrowed just for the courthouse, it'll put us in a hole for 20 years.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I strongly support this, even though it's Deschutes County is behind them. But my neighbor to the north really needs this. They're really growing, and they are facing some challenges. But as we've heard today, we need to have a court system to bring in businesses mm-hmm. and everything like that. And so I'm sure that Representative Huffman and myself strongly support this request.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you
very much.
So does that mean Amy and May are not coming up? All right. Doug and Gail. Let's bring you two up together.
Oh my.
We'll hold hands on the way out.
Couldn't resist.
Thank you. Co-chairs, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. It's very easy to sit here side by side with my my colleague and cohort on the other side of the aisle and tell you that full and adequate funding for the courts is just so very important for the public safety system to operate well. The one thing that I was thinking about with respect to my testimony today was really it definitely you need to have access to the courts, the judges, and have available courtrooms to try your case. But so often cases get held up because you just simply can't, the judge doesn't have enough time to get their work done in chambers. There's so much the courts do when they're not on the bench. They're back in their chambers and they're looking through volumes of documents. We've done a subpoena and we need to get some of these sensitive case records, but we don't give everything. So the judge has to put their judge's eye on it and go through this stack of records to figure out what we get, what we don't get. Sometimes they're actually redacting entries on pages of documents. They have to be available to review search warrant affidavits. Often they get phone calls from DHS about an emergency situation with respect to a child that's in the ward of the custody of the state. There's a probation officer who needs to talk to them about someone who has violated some conditions of release and some urgent transition and changes of conditions need to occur. The judges simply need to be available for these sort of behind-the-scenes work that isn't always available. I mean, it isn't always visible to the eye, but can really clog things up if they don't have enough time. So when the judges are stacked up back to back in the courtroom all the time, the work that they have to get done behind the scenes in chambers stacks up as well, and that could really, really, really delay cases. Nothing hurts more than being all lined up, ready to go for trial, having your expert witness in the plane, all of your witnesses lined up, and then you show up to court and you realize that they've sent out three trials to one judge and you didn't make the call. You're not the first one to go. And you have to turn around and send everybody back home. It's these sort of things that are becoming more and more common. And really, if there was to be an investment in public safety, it would be to allow the flow of business to occur without that kind of backlog. So we definitely would love to see this committee place high emphasis on adequate funding for the courts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, Williamson and Shields and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Harkelrode. I'm the executive director for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I'm the retired Lane County District Attorney. I spent 34 years in courtrooms. I've tried a couple hundred jury trials. I've been in those courtrooms thousands of times. So let me tell you what I want up on the bench. I want somebody who's smarter than I am, and you say, well, that's no problem about any lawyer to do that.
Cover yourself.
I thought I'd get that out before one of the committee members said that. But I want somebody who's smarter than I am. I want somebody who's a perpetual learner, that they follow the law. The law changes all the time. The Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court tell us what the law is, and it's ever-changing. I want somebody with great character up there on the bench. I want them to treat everybody in that courtroom with respect. The truth is, I don't want them to yell at anybody. That affects cases, and it affects people's lives. So these people up there on that bench need to be the best of the best when it comes to lawyers. They need to be the best of the best. And you've heard that gently sneaking up on that from the civil bar here, saying we need the best of the best. We need somebody who really understands the civil law and these big pieces of litigation. The same is true in the criminal law, as Gail and I both know. All right. If you're going to have the best of the best, you can't pay them $124,000 a year and expect to get consistently over time the best of the best. And I know you've given them a couple of raises, relatively small in my view. And there seems to be, in my mind, and this is just me talking, a culture of poverty for professional elected officials in this state. These judges are lifetime, not lifetime.
That's a little long.
Pardon me? I missed that, Senator.
They're dedicated.
Repeating that, just for the record.
Okay.
Legislators.
I looked at your salaries a long time ago and said, I can't afford to support my family, and passed on your job, or trying to run for your job, I should say. But my point here is we need to get those salaries of the judges up to a higher level than they are now at $125,000. We're paying our senior assistant attorney generals, last time I looked, 68 of them, $134,000. They do important work. I'm not suggesting they're overpaid at all. I'm just suggesting our judges are significantly underpaid. And we need to get them up there, and then we need to hold them there. I like the idea of that cost of living. And so that's my pitch to you today, and I shall forego pitching the DA salaries. Thank you.
You did that nice.
Thank you for the restraint. Any questions? Thank you. And last but not least, I have Karen Nibbler. Is there anybody else who wants to testify who's not on the list? Because there is an open seat. All right. Thank you.
It's hard to follow those two. And I think I represent the general public. My name is Karen Nibbler. I'm from the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And I just have a few things that I wanted to comment on. The League has always been supportive of the judicial system. We did a study several years ago, and we visited all the courthouses and noticed that there was wires strung everywhere. Their electronic system was a mess, and also the courthouses had a lot of repairs that needed to be made. And so I would encourage you to maintain that list that they have of repairs and replacement projects, and also to continue the e-court implementation. We think both of those are wonderful, and we'd like to have that continued. Also, I think generally the public looks at those courthouses as, I mean, that's the court, is their courthouse in the county, and it's really important to them, and they're usually proud of them. So I think the public wants you to keep those courthouses up too. Also, we support the budget request for additional judges and staff for the circuit courts. I think the judges made a good case for having additional judges, and I am sure that there's need for other court staff, too. People come in lots of times, and they're very upset over what's happening, and you need compassionate people to deal with them. You know, we don't say that there should be a specific number or an amount, because that's your unenviable job to decide at what level you're going to fund these budgets. But it's very important that they have the staff, and the Chief Justice needs to ask for what he needs. And that's his job, and he would be irresponsible if he didn't. But we know that they aren't going to come out. He's not going to get everything that he asked for. So in addition, we would like to continue to support the family courts and the treatment courts, because we think in the long run that these are very cost effective, that you can solve some problems so that people don't continue to cycle through. And we think that the role of the courts is very pivotal to the whole criminal system and the family law system. So it's they're a critical piece, and we need to keep them strong. Thank you. Excellent.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? All right, last call. With that, I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5514. Anything else? The good of the order?
Madam Co-Chair, this is the last day you have scheduled for public hearings for this budget. They will be coming back to you in phase two. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. I'm a budget analyst, and I'll be happy to help you prior to phase two. Next week, on Monday, you have a one-day public hearing and public testimony on the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability, and the remainder of next week, beginning on Tuesday, is dedicated to the Public Defense Services Commission budget.
Excellent. Thank you.
So we do have a full committee tomorrow?
There's a full Ways and Means Committee in the morning.
There's a full Ways and Means Committee, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Yeah. 9 or 8:30?
It's at 9 o'clock.
8:30.
9 o'clock, I believe. I'll double check right now. But
important to me.
Real quickly, I apologize that we were late today. We had a long floor debate. I had anticipated that Senator Devlin would make an announcement that we'd be back down at 1:15. So I will try to do that, and we'll, if the staff could try to keep an eye on what's happening on the floor to make sure that
we were watching in the lounge.
Yeah, we knew you were going to be late.
Good.
Yeah. And to clarify, the full committee meeting for those of you on full committee is at 9 a.m.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. With that, I will close this meeting.
Sub-subsidy.
We've got two or three today.
This meeting.
Sub-subsidy.
We've got two or three today.
All right. With that, I will close.